Hey everybody, and welcome to Max Spoilers for Marvel's What If. I'm Ross Fund, and I'm here with Brian Vohr. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Ross.
Hey, how's it going?
Old friend. It's good. we're missing Ben Hansen today, but he's guiding us from afar with his podcast expertise.
Exactly. So, yeah, if you are watching this and you have not sworn an oath of non-interference, you can unlock the podcast version of this and a bunch of other stuff by supporting MinMax on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/minmax with two N's. And thanks for your support. So, Brian, what if? So, are you, give me some background here. Are you like a big Watcher fan? Have you read a bunch of What If? What was like your background? And were you excited for this show?
I was only familiar with the basic concept of What If, where just like anything crazy can happen. I had maybe run a couple comics back in the day. I think I had the Watcher card from one of those old Marvel sets. And I was like, ooh, he seems like a neat dude. But that's all really I knew going into this show. And I was just kind of ready to expect the unexpected.
Yeah, I was a big Marvel reader as a kid, especially, and, you know, I still read plenty now, but I never got super into What If. I had a couple of issues, but it was like, it was already hard enough to keep with everything that, like, is happening in the universe, and so, like, speculative, imaginary stories were, like, a hard sell for me. But, you know, as soon as I heard that Jeffrey Wright was playing the Watcher in this, and they made like a Jeffrey Wright-ized Watcher with a giant big head and everything, I was like, this, that sounds interesting to me.
Yeah, he brings a lot of prestige to the project. And I thought he did an amazing job as the Watcher. I think, like you were saying, it's hard to care. I think that was the tough part in the early goings on with this series. It's kind of hard to care because you're like, well, is any of this really matter or is it real? And then I think towards the end of the series, we find out this is all very much in canon and is quote unquote real in the universe.
Yeah, exactly. I love a good anthology series, but like when it makes that hard right turn from anthology to like continuity and like in universe and it's all connected and serialized, it's such a crazy right turn, and it's like so much fun when it happens that you're just like, what?
Yeah, I think that's what helps with being on Disney Plus and fully owned, is that we don't have to worry about like, okay, if it starts kind of slow, you know, it doesn't have to like prove super huge viewership numbers. And I think now that maybe the word's kind of getting out once it's wrapping up, like, oh wow, this is actually worth checking out, everybody. Start from the beginning, watch it all the way through. It'll be a big payoff, I promise.
Yeah, that's a great point. You like don't get a lot of slow burn stuff these days where you like invest a little time in it and then it really pays off at the end. Like, remember that was kind of like the deal with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. where that whole first season was like build up to like the final twist, and then everybody just stopped watching it and it was a big problem for the show.
Yeah, and that's very much required on like traditional ABC network viewership and ad data, so they had a tough time with that one. But somehow the show managed to like go on forever, like it just stayed alive somehow all those years.
Yeah, like a crazy seven seasons, and I'm like still hoping that as we get into the multiverse with the MCU that we will run into Chloe Bennett as Quake, and you know, maybe some of the other characters too.
Oh yeah, yeah. We will hit all talk and rumors about season two at the very end of this podcast. Ross, where do you want to get rolling on this? Should we kind of hit that big final arc? That's maybe what the people are excited to chat about right now.
Let's give the people what they want. Yeah. So, you know, I guess Ultron showed up right at the very end of the Party Thor episode, so you kind of knew what was coming. Were there any that I missed prior to that that appearance?
I don't think I saw him show up. I don't think so, because I kept good pretty good track of the cast going through, because I wanted to see, like, okay, who's the real voice actor and who is kind of a stand-in. I am bummed that James Spader is not back for this project after all the huge stars they were able to get.
I know Spader as Ultron is like one of the best voice performances in all of Marvel, and the fill-in person was okay, but just didn't have that special Spader weirdo vibe.
That little edge. And I found too, the first couple episodes I watched full credits, as I normally do with a lot of shows, and I kept seeing big actor names, and I was like, I guess this character is coming in. So at a certain point I skipped those opening credits just so I could be surprised by the episode itself. Did you end up doing that, Ross?
Yeah, after you told me, I was like, this is genius. You just hit skip credits and it takes you right to Jeffrey Wright's incredible delivery of what if you could really feel the ellipses every time he said it. And yeah, even if he hadn't gone on to do, the awesome stuff in the last couple of episodes, I'd be like, Wright was worth every penny just for his reading of that. But yeah, so for listeners, like moving into season two of this, like definitely recommend Brian's strategy here of skipping the opening credits so you're not seeing the names of the stars and just waiting for them to show up.
Yeah. It's a pro strategy for pretty much just what if. I think any other show, it's not kind of dependent on like big bomb drop character introductions or, hey, we got Kurt Russell. Come on, he's in a cartoon. Has he done that before?
Never heard Kurt Russell's voice coming out of a cartoon, and I love that he was he like had one line in that final episode too.
Yeah, just a quick little scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, so where do we start? Ultron is somehow he ends up in the Vision body, and that kind of sets everything in motion for this final arc, right?
Yeah. That was kind of his goal in Age of Ultron, and they didn't even have time to show how he accomplished it here, just that he did it. And really a bad deal for everybody, huh? And especially Thanos.
Oh yeah, Thanos, like, I am surprised, not just this time, but like throughout this series, there's some pretty hard, like, I guess since it's a cartoon, it's considered PG-13 instead of a hard R of being extremely bad case of being split in half.
Yeah, West Thanos and East Thanos.
Yeah. It's very much oh God, what's that? What's the movie that I was even quoting there? Walk Hard. It's an extremely bad case of being split in half. But yeah, he just like gets the nukes, launches them everywhere. Just every planet you've ever cared about in all of Marvel, right?
Yeah, it was a grand tour of every cosmic location we've ever seen, and guess what? Thanos just blew them all up.
Yeah, or Ultron, and
Oh, yeah.
he gets to the point where he's just like floating in space, and is just like, wow, all life is extinguished. Peace is at hand. He feels a little lost, right?
Yes, and yeah, that's probably my favorite moment of the whole show is when the Watcher slides into his comfortable narration of what's going on, and Ultron is like, "Who did I just hear?" And he like pops into the in between multiverse space where the Watcher is hanging out, and is like, "Hello." That is like so creepy and just so cool.
Yeah, and you get the sense that the Watcher has never been shocked by anything, right? Like,
Yes.
he knows everything that's happening. He's seen pretty much everything in the entire universe from the beginning of time, and he can see into the future too, right?
Yes. Yeah, he more or less watches everything that it happens. Maybe he's just like focuses on one multiverse universe at a time, and just goes start to finish like a real binge watcher. But yeah, he seems like he's reaching omnipotence or omniscience. Is that where you know everything? I think so.
Yes.
Yeah, and then it's like I like we got that brief battle between Ultron and the Watcher, where Watcher like sheds his robe for his Watcher battle garb, which you have to assume he's never worn before, because like you would think that him defending himself would be breaking his vow of non-interference, right? If you're total pacifist, he would just let Ultron laser him or whatever, but I guess we can't blame him too much.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. Like, he always had that battle gear, like, in case I need to break every rule, the only rule that I need to follow, and just watch everything. But
Yes.
I don't blame him too bad for ultimately having to interfere and defend himself, because if all of existence is annihilated, then who is he even answering to? What does a rule even matter if the entire context of the rule is vaporized, right?
Yes, exactly. And I do wish, like, okay, to my memory, he like uses like his cosmic energy or whatever to change his robe to his battle outfit. I kind of wish he had done like a grab to the side and just swoop it off, and then he was wearing it underneath the whole time. It'd be a, or maybe like rip from the center.
I think I would like the Chippendales breakaway pants style of reveal.
If anybody could pull it off, it's him.
Oh yeah. Great body, great giant head. So they have a battle. Ultron is like, "Oh, this is great. I basically have power. There's a whole multiverse out there. So there's so many more lives to take care of. So much more peace to bring to so many worlds, right?"
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of more or less where we leave off with that second to last episode and get into the last one, where one of my favorite things happens in all of like entertainment when a team gets put together.
Oh.
Like, yeah, like, Watcher doing it here just reminds me of MacGruber showing up and getting Tut Beamer and all those guys together.
Oh, yeah, so good.
Go down a bunch of names on a list and like circle them as you find them. I do like that Watcher is like, okay, I better put together a team of the toughest badasses from throughout the multiverse. And then he's like, oh, maybe just the people I saw recently because I can't think of anybody else. It's like huge recency bias here, Watcher.
I'm surprised. Well, and I was like, oh man, he didn't bring in any zombies, but we'll get to that. But it was fun how Tony's like, oh yeah, I'm always the main character and this is great, and he's like, actually no, I'm here to get Gamora.
Yes. And okay, that Gamora was not from a previous episode, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that.
Unless she was just like said hi at the. She might have been hanging out in the T'Challa as Star-Lord
Yeah,
episode.
I was wondering if it was that one, but I wasn't sure. I was like, because he already got T'Challa. By the way, how great was it to hear Chadwick Boseman show up again one final time in this last episode? So cool.
Oh,
And
so great. Yeah, he popped in a couple times here and there after his big episode. It's great to hear every time, but now it's like every time you came back, you're like, great. I get to hear a new performance, and now that season one is completely over, you're like, oh man, now it's really, really over.
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And yeah, so theoretically, that Gamora, I guess maybe she had defeated Thanos in her universe because she had that like Infinity Stone grinder thingy.
Yeah, that seemed like an extremely handy gadget to have. Kind of a Deus Ex grinder there.
I do like you have to put them all in there before it'll like chop them up or crush them or whatever it does. Like you can't do one at a time, you got to get them all.
Yeah, it's kind of a one-time use situation.
Yeah, and it didn't work unfortunately, but like I love a good like team up battle, and this final battle in that episode with all the characters versus Ultron was the ultimate of that, where people are like, combining powers, they're throwing everything together, they're mixing it all up. Black Widow gets in a Hurricanrana, which I always appreciate.
Oh man, I know. I bet the best move was the team up, high low, from Black Widow and Agent Carter, the attack on Ultron, right?
Yep, the dual shields, total elimination.
Yeah, total elimination.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah, any other standout parts of that last episode for you?
Well, I really loved the like kind of magical type of attacks where it was just like, okay, here's a swarm of Thor hammers. They're gonna all crunch you down, and like the sounds on those is always so nice.
Yep, when he does like the Thor magnet ball and then the last little one comes in, tink.
Yeah, oh, so great. Also love the portal, the full of zombies dumping on Ultron. That was excellent, and it's a good way to kind of pull in small references, at least to most of the episodes, right?
Yep. Yeah, I'd be remiss if I didn't shout out my guy Batroc making an appearance in this episode, voiced by GSP himself.
Yes, I knew that was gonna excite you, as a big Batroc guy.
Yeah, they should have brought him with for the final battle, is my opinion on that. But it was a big start of that episode for me, because Batroc, my favorite like minor character villain in all of MCU, followed up immediately by another Dairy Queen reference. So I felt like it was being made specially for me.
Oh yeah, there was so much stuff that came through with that I was like, oh, Ross is definitely gonna love this final episode even better. Yeah, I was glad to see it was kind of like that reference to Winter Soldier opening, right? When
Yeah,
she
exactly.
Agent Carter is now the one jumping down on the ship to fight Batroc. But God, it was good to see him again, especially since well, I guess we won't can maybe spoil other series in case people haven't watched some other things. But it's good to see him. Let's see. So, kind of brilliant usage and ad adapting after the whole crush the Infinity Stones didn't work. Black Widow had the virus arrow, right?
Yes.
And shot it right into Ultron's eyeball, which seems to be a good weak point.
Yeah, I mean, who knew that she was at least as good an archer as Hawkeye?
Yeah, that was a very impressive shot,
Yeah, off of the
especially from a.
flying motorcycle.
Yeah. They know how to raise the stakes in these movies.
Totally.
That was great. So that uploaded, that had Zola built into the arrow tip, which they had previously kind of harvested in the last episode, and he is the Hydra kind of sentient computer program, right?
Yes, I love that. Just one of the great things about this series is that how it draws like from so many different places, like so many minor characters, like Arnim Zola, like such a little footnote in the scope of the MCU, and then he just becomes like the key to defeating Mega Ultron.
Yeah, it was great, and it was cool to see kind of the internal computer program battle for that body, and of course Killmonger betrays them all. Like when he was recruited, I'm like, why bring in that guy? He's obviously a bad dude, but the Watcher just knows. He knows better than everybody.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was like. This is example A1 of the recency bias at play here, Watcher. But he did have a good reason to do it, and I was really happy for more Michael B. Jordan. Like, Killmonger, I think, is one of the best villains in the MCU, and to get more of him doing his thing was fantastic.
I gotta say too, his character model was super on. I can't say the same for every likeness in this series.
Yeah, what are the ones that struck you as a little like weird?
Well, the good ones come to mind first. I feel like, was Banner pretty good? Haley Atwell's somewhat decent.
Black Widow didn't look a whole lot like ScarJo or really sound a whole lot like her. Tony Stark was good, and that voice actor they get for all of these like non-Robert Downey Jr. Tony Stark voice appearances is like uncanny. He's so good.
Yeah, definitely. You don't think for one second, like, man, I wish they would have got the real Robert Downey Jr. Like, there's definitely some that make you forget, and others that you're like, gah, man, I wish they just would have got the real person for this.
Yes, I'm thinking like a lot of the ones maybe where they did not get the live action voice actor were maybe some of the weaker character models, like the Chris Pratt one. He's not dressed like Star Lord, I guess, but his Dairy Queen employee outfit did not make him look a whole lot like Star Lord to me.
That's true. He was just a skinny little wimp.
Probably would not put enough stuff in my Blizzard order.
Oh, that's why you got to order extra stuff every time, Ross.
And
It's
I
the
do.
key. It's the key to everything.
Yes. But I guess, like, okay, they did not get Chris Evans to be Captain America, but like skinny Steve Rogers was one of the best character models.
Yeah. It was interesting to see more of him, and since it's in a cartoon, you don't have that kind of weirdness of the first movie where it's which overall, like, it still holds up pretty okay, but there's just a slight weirdness that his face is just kind of pasted on a smaller guy's body. Like, it was good for the time, but there's still just in the back of your head, you just know. But in the cartoon, it's just totally natural.
Exactly. Yeah, good for the time is the key phrase there. But yeah, and the cartoon, obviously sidesteps all of that stuff. That Captain Carter episode was the perfect one to lead off the show with, I thought, because it had such a good, like, central idea. And Haley Atwell is always amazing. I was a big fan. My wife and I rewatched Agent Carter, the full series, not too long ago, and she's
Nice.
totally amazing through that whole thing. I thought that first episode had some of the best direction of anything. Like, the action was like super well staged. It was unbelievable. That whole it the that first episode just totally sold me on the show.
Yeah, I was down. I'm obviously a big Agent Carter, Agent Shield fan myself, and it was great to kind of see that little swaparoo happen. Great way to just like showcase some action because it's fun to start with a bang. It doesn't have to be super cerebral when it's a show like this to like right out of the gate. It's fun that they were able to layer that in over time. But great to see her. It's a great what if just to see like, she gets to become the most powerful soldier in the world, but still has to deal with was it Bradley Whitford? The
Yep.
and all the, all the kind of bias against women of the time and most of history, I guess. So like being the most powerful person on Earth, but also having to put up with all that crap. It was a good dichotomy.
Yeah, exactly. And it kind of avoided, like, my least favorite thing about What If, like the comic series and all that, is that a lot of times it just kind of boiled down to how is everybody going to die in this issue? Like, who's going to kill everybody here? And I know, like, that was kind of the theme of the Ultron one, and I was totally okay with that because it's what turned the show into like the big rousing finale. But it was like, maybe it's the third episode, the one where Hank Pym, the original Ant-Man, is just like murdering everybody. It was that was kind of like how I recall What If comics being, where it's just like, what if this person killed everybody this time? Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. I feel like they had to do at least one of those, right? Just to kind of satisfy a lot of the old What If fans. Plus, it's compelling if you've never seen that before. What I did enjoy, sometimes things were kind of fixed in the end, but other times they were just had free rein to have a bad, like a quote unquote bad ending. Like, oh, geez, Everything went wrong and there's no fixing it. I would say like that's notable in the Doctor Strange episode where kind of weird, evil Cthulhu Strange wins in the end and he's like, "Oh yeah, this was a huge mistake. I destroyed all reality."
Oh, sorry, everybody. Yeah, and then it always ends with the Watcher being like, "Oh, let's be glad that didn't happen everywhere." All right, guys. But yeah, that Strange episode was one of my favorites. I loved the final battle. Like, it was super colorful and like inventive. So awesome.
Yeah, you can just create so many like crazy creatures and all kinds of super weirdness when you're making an episode about Doctor Strange, because that's just kind of his whole vibe is just absolutely insanity and weirdness, right?
Yeah, and you could tell Cumberbatch was having a good time playing like the evil version of himself.
Yeah. He was another. I felt his likeness was like spot on. He did a great job voicing. Like, it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah, and
And I did like the whole sequence of him just like, okay, now I'm going to fix it this way. And I'm going to stop, my girlfriend's death this way and this way and this way. And just kept. That's like a Groundhog's Day that was like unchangeable.
Yes. Yeah, I love a good time loop story and his like progressive frustration or depression and whatever really super effective in that one.
Yeah. And I like how just easy it is to tell, okay, this is weird, strange because he's got the dark, sunken eyes.
And that little pointy goatee.
Oh, just a little more pointy.
Yeah,
Every once in a while, a tentacle will come out of his arm or something. He's like, stuff it back in.
back in there. Yeah, so are any highlights from any of the other episodes that really stuck out to you?
I'm just thinking, the zombie episode, I hadn't watched right away. I saw a lot of crap online about it, and I was just like, you know what? I'm sick of zombies too, but seeing super-powered zombie, like, I know they've had Marvel zombies in the past. I see why they did it, and I don't know, it kind of hits the notes that you need for a zombie movie where it's like survivors barely escaping, getting picked off one by one, finding rescue and solace in one place, and then it's like, wait a second.
Yep.
Obviously they're cannibals. Like you gotta have that in every zombie story, and they hit the beats.
It hit all those high marks. The thing with Peter Parker being like, "Are you guys serious? You don't know how all this works." That was a nice little twist on it. And Paul Rudd did a lot of heavy lifting in that episode, I thought. He the disembodied head of Ant-Man was a big highlight for me.
Oh yeah. He was so great too. And he a lot of good like the real Paul Rudd doing real quips was so great. And the fact that at the end it's like, oh man, all the Avengers are gone. What are we gonna do? And he's like, hey, I'm an Avenger, I count. He's like, oh yeah, sorry, whoops.
Yes. Yep. Always overlooked. But not for long now that he has that cape.
Yeah, that's really going to help his mobility. Whenever it's a floating head in a jar, I'm always like, oh my God. A, that would
Yes.
be totally weird. And also, what if you got an itch on your nose or something? Or like, how is the jar not full of hair? I just think of all the
Yes.
weird practical conclusion or issues, but
His beard is going to get out of control in there.
yeah, it's because you can't open that, right? I don't know.
I would think not. I
Yeah, that
guess
was.
maybe that is something that we will discover the consequences of in season two, which I believe has been essentially confirmed by the creators, right?
Yes, I kind of looked it up and they did a little piece with Entertainment Weekly right before the last episode, which I'm glad I didn't. I obviously wasn't Googling this because they didn't want spoilers before. But they not, have not only confirmed it, but they're like, oh yeah, all the scripts are all written. It's all
Nice.
set to go. Obviously we don't have any info on timing or anything, but The head writer, A.C. Bradley, says this upcoming season will focus a lot more on the character stories and heroes showing a different side of them that people didn't expect. Hopefully they can relate to. We're sticking with the anthology form, and it's going to be all new stories, lots of fun, new heroes pulling from Phase 4 than we were obviously able to do this season. Hopefully we'll see hints of Eternals, Shang-Chi, and the Black Widow characters. The fun of What If is that we get to explore the entire infinite multiverse, so we try and bounce around as much as we can. So very interesting that they're going to kind of be pulling from a lot of the recent and upcoming movies for What If Season 2.
Yeah, I'm so high on Shang-Chi right now that I was really hoping that his little circle of characters would be involved. So that's cool. I really hope there's a Shang-Chi focused episode. Anything that you really want to see?
Oh boy, man, that is a great question. I wouldn't mind. Like, what if there was a flip? Since they mentioned Black Widow, if Florence Pugh ended up being the widow, kind of the main widow character, and then Natasha is kind of the sister that's kind of left behind.
The wayward sister. Yeah, that could be cool. Anything with more Florence, I'm up for. She was probably my favorite character in that movie.
Yeah, she's so great. And I'm glad that she's coming back for the upcoming Hawkeye season, right?
Totally, yes. Yeah, and you know, for season two of What If, I'm really curious, like, how they're going to top the finale of this season, or if they are going to try to. It's like, it's kind of hard to think of a more powerful cosmic villain than Ultron with all of the Infinity Stones. So I wonder if they are going to try to build it up again to a big crossover type thing, or if that was just a season one thing.
Yeah, it's really a tricky puzzle because you were able to make everything feel more important in retrospect with this season. Now everyone knows that it's on the table.
Yeah.
So do you drop hints or drop more hints along the way that people are going to come together for something? Or it'd be weird, I think, for them to go back to just anthology, nothing's connected, everything's just a one-off episode of the week type of thing.
Yeah, it makes me think that they'll probably do something. I can't imagine what it is. I mean, I guess you could do a thing where, Killmonger does eventually get those stones in that little pocket dimension and, ends up being the big bad of season two. But, you know, I have no idea.
That seems to be, the looming threat, like anytime those two super powerful beings could kind of break out of that pocket dimension.
Yes.
But they're really trying to downplay like the big world universe ending threat, at least for season two. But the thing is with these shows, you don't know how many seasons you get. So if you have to address that threat at some point, like you can't leave it going too long. You can be like, oh yeah, we'll do it in season four. And then Disney's like, I think we're going to focus on something else.
Yeah, I guess one thing we can say that we will be excited to see is when crazy giant head Jeffrey Wright shows up in the live action MCU, because it's got to happen, right?
Oh, man. Like a post-credits deal?
Yep.
Hyper-realistic Jeffrey Wright face.
It's just, I can't even imagine what it's going to look like, except that I know it's going to be incredible. I'm like, maybe that'll happen in Fantastic Four if they start like doing Galactus type stuff, because I think the Watcher traditionally played a big role in that original epic Fantastic Four storyline from a few years into the original comic.
Yes. Now remind me and the rest of viewers who may not happen to know, what role does the Watcher play? Is he kind of, it's like Silver Surfer is Galactus's kind of herald, right? That scouts stuff out or warns people of his coming. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah, that's kind of traditionally how it goes. Or Surfer kind of comes and is like, "Hey, Galactus, I found the new planet. I found lunch here. Here it is, catered right for you." And then, I think like a side effect of that is that the people of that planet are like, "What? What? What? We're about to be eaten." So yeah, if that's how it plays out, who knows what kind of twist they'll do for live action. Like, I guess we don't have any knowledge of this, but I'm just assuming like eventually with Fantastic Four you do Galactus, right? So gotta happen.
Yeah, there's only so many huge cosmic villains that can serve as a significant threat after we've already, we've gone through the Infinity Saga,
Yes, exactly. So yeah, and it's been so long. I read that storyline when I was a kid. I think that's where The Watcher premiered, and I'm sure somebody will correct us in the comics if not. But like it was probably like kind of the classic Watcher thing where he's like, "Oh, my oath, I can't break it, but should I help them or shouldn't I?"
So he d debuts as like a I'm watching Galactus just eat everybody all the time as kind
Yeah,
of his premier role.
think that's how it went, and I think there's a lot more mileage they can get out of like his oath and stuff like that. Because I love that moment where he's watching Clint and Natasha in that second to last episode, and he's like, "Come on, just look in the right box. Look in the right box."
Yeah, that one's great. It's right there. And he's just like, "Well, I've looked for 5 minutes and I'm giving up forever."
Exactly. Yes. So, yeah, so as we're winding down here, anything else, any final thoughts or anything we're looking forward to in the future?
Ooh, as far as thing, I guess we kind of talked about stuff we want to see in What If, but as far as other Marvel properties, it does seem like Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness keeps getting higher and higher in by the priority list of like, wow, this is going to be a very important movie to kind of determine the future of the franchise. Shang-Chi obviously was great, but it wasn't necessarily like a big rolling forward of the new phase of things that are happening overall in the universe, right?
Exactly. And like, it was, yeah, Loki laid a lot of the groundwork for multiverse and probably, the potential huge villain coming up in multiversal stories. So, yeah, really excited to see where it's going. I mean, that Hawkeye trailer came out recently. I love the Christmas vibe to that, and Kate, Hawkeye number two is an awesome character in the comics. Pizza Dog is amazing, so I'm really looking forward to that one too.
Now that's the Matt Fraction. It's kind of based on the Matt Fraction books.
Yeah, I was really excited about how much it looks to be drawing from those with that trailer, with like track-suited, tough guy villains, and like there's like a car chase that looked like exactly like it did in that comic. So yeah, it's my favorite take on Hawkeye ever, and the fact that it looks like they're drawing from that strongly is like really, really exciting for me.
Now, I'm debating, maybe some other people out there who haven't read the book comics either. Should I binge all those comics, or should I just let the show come at me fresh?
If you need a comic series to read and you're looking for something, I would say go for it, because just Hawkeye in the MCU is such a different character at this point than the one in the comics world, that it's gonna be different in a lot of ways, even if it is using the same elements.
Okay, very cool.
Yeah.
I think we should probably mention the Eternals as well, which is maybe the strangest looking upcoming Marvel property, but
Yeah.
it's the kind of thing where like, I guess we gotta trust them. They make stuff work.
Yeah, it's the one that I am most like curious to see how it is, because that the teaser did nothing for me, and the newer trailer did look a little more exciting for my tastes. I saw it in the theater, actually, in front of Shang-Chi, and that what I thought was a terrible joke about the fall collection IKEA with the broken table, like, that killed the entire theater. Like, people were dying laughing about that. I was like, okay, maybe it's just me.
Yeah, you're, am I the one that's in the wrong here? I don't know. I'm really curious about that one because I just don't even know what to think. But yeah, as far as shows and movies in the Marvel world, I think we covered some of the most pressing stuff that's got maybe trailers and is coming soon enough, right?
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, Brian, where can people find you other than on MinMax social media?
I am at Brian underscore Vore on Twitter. So you can follow me there. And obviously following the MinMax accounts on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitch and YouTube. There's a lot of places to get good MinMax content, and I'm helping out over there. So hopefully you're enjoying the kind of stuff that's coming out these days.
Yeah, and you can follow me at Are You Bad Enough on Twitter. And speaking of Min-Max content, a couple of cool things coming up. There's a deepest dive on Metroid Dread, super thorough discussion on that, which I'm very excited for. And the other big thing that I'm excited for is Columbo's Day. Not Columbus Day, but Columbo's Day. The legendary detective will be celebrating that this coming Monday.
With special guest Joe Juba and Columbo expert, right?
Yeah, he is Columbo as I am to Murder, She Wrote. So I'm excited to ask him all of my pressing Columbo questions.
Yeah, is there any kind of rearranged Murder, She Wrote holiday on the horizon that we can look forward to?
I have been searching the calendar for one and I have not found it yet. So we're gonna have to keep looking, but in the meantime, at least we have Columbo's Day. So yeah, well, thanks for joining me, Brian. This was super fun to talk about What If, a show that I wasn't sure about and turned into something amazing.
Totally. It begs to be discussed out of all the weirdness and twists. So I'm glad we got to talk about it.
Exactly. Well, yeah, thanks for listening, everybody, and we will see you later.